Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
This is the Rental Income Podcast, where we talk to owners of rental properties and give you actionable tips and advice that will help you make more money while dealing with less hassle. And now your host, Dan Lane.
I put together a list of seven things I wish I knew earlier about renting properties, and you can download your free copy. Just go to my website, freelandlordgift.com. Joining me on the show today is Jeff Steinman, and Jeff found a really good deal on a fourplex. The only problem is it was in really, really bad shape. It needed a lot of work, and it had some tenants in there that weren't the world's greatest tenants. They weren't paying rent. They weren't taking care of the place. So he needed to get rid of the tenants, so he had to evict a few. Some of them just left, and then he had to put some money into fixing the property up. Today, he has a really nice property that has great tenants and it's cash flowing great. So I want to find out exactly how he did this. I think this is a good strategy for buying rental properties. Jeff, before we get into the interview, what made you want to buy a fourplex as opposed to just doing the same thing with a single family house?
You know, I think the biggest thing for me, Dan, on that was when a single family is not occupied, when you don't have a tenant in it, you ain't got no income.
Right, right.
The great thing about the fourplex, particularly – fourplexes are amazing in South St. Louis because you can have – I mean half of it can be vacant and it's – and it just about breaks even, right? So I have to have 50% more than 50% vacancy to go into the red, and that's what I just love about the four families. And then we also have a lot of two families in South St. Louis, and those are good too. But dollar for dollar, dollar in versus dollar in to revenue that you get out, they don't compare to the four families. And the downside of the four families is in my particular area, they do so well that they're hard to find. Nobody wants to sell them.
Right. Definitely you would think that a fourplex is a better investment than a single family for most people.
Yeah. I mean, okay. You know, why wouldn't you have four units or why wouldn't you want four units instead of just one? And I think the important – like the way I look at it is like how much money do I have to put into this versus how much I'm going to get back out in from a monthly revenue standpoint?
When you bought the property, you inherited some tenants and the place wasn't in that great of a shape. Tell me about what you walked into when you first bought the property.
Yeah. So there were – when I bought the place, there were three tenants in four units. One was vacant. The vacant one was in pretty bad shape. I mean, it had some nasty carpeting. It had – somebody had just kind of like ripped all the doors off. A smattering of appliances that some of them worked, some of them didn't. And it was really dirty, really gross, a whole lot of kind of nasty stuff going on there.
Was that pretty expensive to get up to the standards that you needed it to be?
Well, you know, Dan, like I was saying before we started talking, we took these two of these four units and we took them from literally the bottom of the market. So for the square footage, the least that you would ever rent them for. And I think it was like – I think they were renting for like $4.75 or maybe $5.25 or something like that. And we completely renovated them and took them to not the nicest finishes that you can find, but the nicest finishes that make sense dollar for dollar in that market, in that square footage with the attributes that that building has. So the short answer is, yeah, I mean, we spent about 8 to 12, and it would spend a couple of years, but I think it was like 8 to 12,000 per unit to upgrade two of the units.
And how much did that increase your cash flow by?
We went from like 500, 525 to – we rent them right around 8, 795,
wow. 825. That's a really big improvement.
Yeah, it's huge. And, you know, part of that is that one of the things that I'm actually really proud of and has been so rewarding for me is that block is a block that had a number of problem properties on it over the past, you know, 15 or 20 years. And this building was sort of the last problem property on that block. And now it's one of the nicest buildings on the block.
So now tell me this, when you're buying a place that has tenants in there already, did you kind of look through their credit or their references to make sure that they were good tenants to know what you were getting into before you bought the place?
One of the things that I worked with a real estate agent who's a friend of mine, and he's also a big real estate investor. And the thing that he told me was, he said, Jeff, you can't rely on any of the information that you get about the previous tenants. So we approached it with the assumption that they were all bad tenants and that they were all going to have to go. And we, you know, and that was, I wouldn't say you should always make that assumption, but that was the appropriate assumption given the condition of the building and kind of what we knew about the situation and the circumstances. So we weren't too worried about that. And, you know, legally, you, when you buy the building, you are obligated, at least in this situation, I believe, I don't know how it works everywhere, but we were obligated to honor those leases that we had, which we ended up not even getting copies of the leases. It was the building was actually a foreclosure. We bought it from the bank.
Okay.
So so there was not a whole lot of kind of due diligence to be done there. We just assumed that everybody would end up leaving. We ended up only for any extended period of time, only keeping one of those tenants.
And what was wrong with the other tenants? Were they just not paying?
Well, so we had so there are four units. It came with one vacant, one moved out right after, and it was, well, I think during the closing process that person just disappeared. So don't know what happened there. One of the tenants was, she was a good tenant, and she stayed for another, I think, year and a half after we bought the building. The last unit was the interesting one. I was over there doing some work to one of the units, because there was one unit that we were able to just painted and swept the floor and did some really minor repairs, and we rented that right away. That was the first unit that I was working. So when I was over there working on that unit, right next door in the other unit, I kept hearing a lot of noise and seeing a lot of traffic, if you know what I mean. Right. So
it's like drug dealers.
That's what I believe.
Okay. Okay.
I'm relatively certain that they were probably selling pot or something out of that.
Okay.
Apartment. And wow. Then I saw some activity that, to my untrained eye, I am not an expert on prostitution, but it did appear to be prostitution or something.
Wow.
Going on. And then I think what happened was, so I was kind of, and they were actually paying. They were paying very low. They had very low rent. They called us about some issues in the apartment. I think their sink was leaking or something like that. So we fixed that. And then, like, it was that following January, because we closed on the building in November of 2010. And then that following January, we had I can't even remember what it was. Like there was some – I think maybe they didn't pay their rent, or they were late on their rent or something like that, or they gave us a little bit of trouble. And at that point we said, you know what, let's just nip this in the bud right now. We think we've got some issues. Their lease was expired, so they were on a month to month. So we didn't legally, and I know these laws vary all over the country, but mm-hmm. where we were in our situation, we didn't have any legal obligation but to give them, I think, 60 days notice or something like that. So we just went ahead and evicted them. And then that allowed us the opportunity to completely redo that unit as well.
Was it trouble trying to evict them without having a lease? Because you mentioned you didn't have copies of their leases.
Well, from what I understand from the attorney that did this for me, that we knew that their lease was expired and that they were on a month to month. So that made it easy, because at that point it was all just statutory. Like, it didn't matter so much what the lease, to my understanding, it didn't matter what the lease said. It just mattered that there was no lease in force at the time.
Okay.
So that gave us a lot of latitude in what we could do. We actually, in fact, the attorney that I worked with said we didn't have to have a reason. We just had to give them the proper notice.
When you bought that place and you didn't have the leases, how did you know what people were paying?
Well, we had rent rolls. We got, you know what? Honestly, now that I think of it, we had rent rolls, but I think there's one tenant we had to just call and ask her how much it was.
Wow.
We knew we were getting ourselves into a kind of a goofy situation
there. Yeah.
But I think we had a list of the rent rolls, and then I think there was one where there was some question, and we just called her, and who knows, maybe she knocked $50 off of her.
Right.
She was smart, I guess she did.
So take me back before you found this place. So were you looking at a lot of other fourplexes before you bought this place, or was this the first fourplex you saw?
Well, I looked at a lot of properties, and I looked at a lot of the twos. And then when I mean, I'm a numbers guy, particularly when it comes to real estate. And I was looking at the twos, and I was like, why would I buy a two when I could buy a four? Because a four does not generally cost twice what a two costs.
And for members of the audience that might not know, can you explain what a two and what a four is?
Yeah, a two is a two family in South San Jose. Okay. We have tons of them. There's just one apartment on top of the other. All right, so you got two floors, one apartment on the bottom, and usually there's a set of steps that goes up to the second floor. You got another apartment up there. A four family is just two of those pushed together on one parcel.
So the numbers just made sense on all of them, or were there some that maybe had better cash flow, or were they all kind of in the same range?
Yeah, well, generally what I found was that if I were to buy a four family, it was – I'm going to kind of make these numbers up because mm-hmm. they varied. But generally speaking, like a four family would cost about 150% what a two family would cost. But it would cash flow more like 175 or 180%. Of what a two family would cash flow. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Why don't you break it down with us, maybe just in some hypothetical round numbers?
Yes. So let's say you can get a two family for $100,000 and it cash flows $1,600 a month. And I'm just talking top line revenue.
Yeah.
Top line rents. So $100,000 in your total purchase for $1,600 of cash flow.
Okay.
A four family doesn't cost double that necessarily. I mean, again, a lot of factors. But in general, a four family does not cost twice what a two family does. So a four family will cash flow potentially as much as like four times what the two family will cost. So let's say the four family will cash flow $3,200 a month. But it's not going to probably cost you double with the two family. So so let's say the four family is cost you $175,000 for that 3200 in cash flow.
The rents, the monthly rent on a two family and a four family, are they about the same, or are the four family rents lower?
The four family will be a little bit lower, but it's not significant. Like it's maybe like $25 or $50.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that does make a lot of sense. Now, what about for the financing? So how did you get the financing? Did you need a big down payment to get the fourplex?
We did put down 30%, which ended up being – I think we paid $105,000 for the building. So it ended up being like 30 grand, 25 or 30. I can't remember if it was 25 or 30%. I think it was 30%.
And the thing that a lot of people don't realize with a four family is you can get just a regular loan. You don't need a commercial loan to get a four family. It's the same kind of loan that you would get if you were going to buy a single family or a duplex. So that's what you did. You just got a regular conventional loan.
It was just a regular conventional mortgage, nothing fancy. Now, I've since refinanced into a commercial, but it was just a regular mortgage, so, like you would get on your house.
Why was it better to do a commercial loan? Like, why did you refi?
We refied because of the extensive improvements that we had done to the building, and we were able to pull some cash out for some future things that we've got planned. It wasn't really so much about interest rate; it was more just about getting that cash out. And when we looked at kind of where we were and assessed kind of what our future plans were, we found a lender that was able to come up with a financing package in a commercial loan that is working out really well for us.
With the commercial loan, is that based on the rent that you're getting and not necessarily the value of the property?
That is the beauty of it, Dan. Right. So he looks at it from a business standpoint, right? When you look at a single family house that you would live in, you don't look at it so much from a cash flow standpoint, because that doesn't make any sense. He's looking at, okay, how much money does this bring in every month? And like, that's like one of the key determiners of value, is how much money does this thing make?
So then, are people better off looking for a commercial loan for a four family, or are you better off getting just a regular residential loan?
Well, you know, I would say that for us, the options were greater with the commercial loan. I don't know that a commercial loan would have been possible initially. And again, I'm speculating to some degree here. I'm just kind of a guy trying to figure this real estate thing out.
Sure, sure.
Just like everybody else.
Yeah.
But I don't know that that we would have been able to get a commercial loan the first time around, because I had no experience as a real estate investor. I'd had my own single family houses at that point, but just that I lived in, but didn't really have the sort of the seasoned experience as a, and I say seasoned experience in air quotes, because I don't consider myself an experienced investor. But you know, I think that a bank may have looked at it totally differently when I was just going out there for the first time ever getting some rental.
Sure. Okay.
But when we refinanced, which that was just maybe 6 months ago, they were able to say, oh, okay, look, here's the history. I mean, obviously they saw all of our bank statements and, you know, saw that, okay, yeah, here's where they've consistently paid the mortgage. Here's where they've consistently gotten the rent revenue in, and this and that. So I think having that history helped.
All right. Well, Jeff, it is time now for us to get into the lightning round. So we got five questions in 60 seconds. Are you up for the challenge? Do you think you can get the five questions in 60 seconds?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, let's give it a shot.
Now, the Rental Income Podcast Lightning Round. Five rapid-fire questions and answers in 60 seconds.
All right, the first question is, what's your favorite real estate book?
Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
All right, the number one fear that I hear from people all the time on why they don't want to own a rental property is they don't want to get a call at 3 a.m. that a toilet's clogged. As a landlord, have you ever gotten this call?
Never, because I use a management company, and I'm pretty sure they've never gotten that call.
Number three, if you had a property sitting vacant for 6 months, you had a potential renter apply that had horrible credit and a spotty work history, would you take a chance on them and rent to them, or let the property sit?
Let the property sit.
And number four, if you could give one piece of advice to a new landlord, what would it be?
Do it. Just do it. Quit worrying about all that crap.
And number five, would you rent a property to your best friend?
Never in a million years.
Jeff, we did it. We did really well. We got plenty of time. So, Jeff, why don't you tell us where we can track you down online? I know you've got a new podcast you just launched. Why don't you tell us what you have going on?
Yeah, I have got a website called howtoquitworking.com. And what we do is we help people to quit their jobs and start a business, whether it's real estate or whatever kind of business that you want to start. We're here to support you with community, business training and knowledge. And we also do coaching. But a couple of things that your listeners might be interested in are, I also have a podcast, and it actually gives you daily tips to make the shift from employee to entrepreneur. And you can get information about that at howtoquitworking.com/daily. And if you just go to howtoquitworking.com, you can get the big podcast, as I call it, where we do interviews with successful entrepreneurs, as well as join our free community and look at our products and programs.
Awesome. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate you spending some time with us today. And on the show today, I know we've talked a lot about financing for rental properties, and I actually have a training class that will hold your hand and walk you through all the different options on how to finance a rental property. If you want to learn more, go to rentalincomepodcast.com/finance. Thank you so much for listening and subscribing. My name is Dan Lane, and this is the Rental Income Podcast.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.